Hey everybody, what's up? This is Joseph Coyne and welcome to the ASCA podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to the ASCA podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Coyne. This is episode 42. To kick things off, got to thank the sponsors for our performance. We're really lucky to partner with Valve. They make the Nord board, the groin bar, which has been renamed the Force Frame recently, Human Track, Force Sticks. Look, I get to use Force Sticks every day on my current role. I can't recommend them highly enough. Really user-friendly and give you something you can action immediately. Also, the feedback for the athletes is great. Not just jump heights, but force sub-reducing, all that type of thing. You can get it real-time. Really good pieces of equipment. So, look, it's not just us either, too. They've got over 500 clients worldwide. This includes EPL, NBA, NFL, NCAA. I know there's almost 40 private performance centres out there for those private S&C guys, 54 clinics, there's a physiotherapy clinics, things like that, and the list goes on. So not just for pro sport, and if you're in the market, please reach out to them. Even if you're just interested in those products, check them out, valperformance.com, shoot them an email, info@valperformance.com. Today we have the second part of our 2019 roundtable. If you remember, this roundtable is all about working in semi-pro, high school or university environments. It's the essence of what actually works out there in the real world outside of pro sport. So we've got three guests. Nicola Morris, she's currently with High Performance Sport New Zealand Rowing, used to be at Sydney University. We've also got Kurt Vogel, who's a private consultant, works with USQ, University of Southern Queensland, and Sam Joseph, who is at St. Edmunds and works with QUT Wildcats Netball. All of these three are experts in working in these academic or semi-pro environments. In the first podcast, we talked strength and power. Now we're talking energy systems, their philosophies, how they assess ESDs, then how they apply that to their training. We also talk what they hope to bring to the table in their ESD work over the next 12 months. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hey, team, we're gonna now move on to energy system work. And we kind of talked about where we're going to put energy system work in relation to their strength and power work just previously, but just like we did with strength and power, I want to talk, what's your sort of philosophy on an ESD program? Is it like a long to short, or is it a short to long, or do you do a lot of maximal aerobic speed, or do you do a lot of intervals, or do you do a lot of like long slow distance work? What's your sort of thoughts on how you train energy systems in the environment, in that sort of semi-professional high school university type environment? And please, we'll start with you again, please, Nicola.
Yeah, so my main philosophy is do as much as I can to help the athlete with the least amount of stress to put on them as possible. So if I can get the most out of them with a 20-minute session, better than a two-hour session, I'd rather do the 20-minute session because I've got all the stresses of being in that semi-pro environment, and for the guys I work with, studying and whatnot. And again, it would change in terms of how I did it would be dependent on the sports. So for example, in the soccer girls, we did a lot of MAS work and small-sided games. Whereas in rugby, we did a lot more, focus on speed and, some repeat speed work.
Yeah, cool. Why do you think you had those differences between soccer and rugby?
Just the differences in how the sport is and what's necessary to run out in a 90-minute game of soccer versus an 80-minute game of rugby. And basically the game mechanics of rugby is short and sharp, and whereas soccer you need to do a lot more long intervals. They run almost double what the rugby guys get, so they need to run pretty much consistently through most of the game. So yeah, just trying to determine what's best for how the sport is.
Sure. And did you have any consideration, say, you've got the sport consideration, this is what the sport is, this is what we need to train to for the sport. Did you get a chance at all to be able to say, well, that's what the sport is,
this is what this person has issues with in terms of energy system work. Maybe they're bad at intervals or they're bad with continuous work. And did you get a chance at all to marry them together, or was that something that just in that environment, it wasn't possible with the people you're working with?
Yeah, unfortunately not possible in terms of individual. Some athletes would come and talk in regards to doing extra work and on what they needed to focus on. But in majority, it would be what the group needed more than, unfortunately, individual, which is not ideal, but you're not going to be able to get that pure individual focus when you've got one person and 40 athletes in front of you. So yeah, we just went more with what the group needed.
It's real interesting too. And then deciding when you decide what the group needs, is that I've been in a situation where it's based off the best players, or in track and field, it's like you basically your best two or three guys in your squad, that's who you're programmed for, and the rest of the squad just have to do the same program. And when if they become and displace those top one, two, or three, then that's what the program gets revolved around them, you know what I mean, with their competition results. And I've also thought it maybe even needs to be reversed with team sports, because obviously your weakest link is probably going to be of big importance. So maybe it needs to be focused on who are the weakest links in the team sport. I don't know. Maybe it should still be strongest players. And focus the programming around them, so you're never exposing yourself to too much of a weakness. But yeah, really interesting concept. Sam, ESD, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you think? I think you, Nikolai, and you kind of covered that spot nicely. Where it really depends on, you know, what I like to go. What have you got there? So of course you've got your athletes and your team concerns. A big one for mine is, what did your coach expect? I think particularly in the semi-pro world, because that might be that coach looking to step up in, you know, a very professional semi-pro league, or it might be, you know, a semi-pro league with next to no funding at all. You know, does your coach want to play this style, this style, this style? I think that's a big consideration for mine. I know with an NBL team currently with the head coach that I want a fit team. I don't care whether it's my goal shooter or my goal keeper. I want them fit. So then you got to try and appease your coach as well, because ultimately they're the one providing you the time. And you've got to keep them happy as well. And then, of course, you've got your sport demands, and then you've got your positional or match-specific demands you've got as well. So it's a lot to marry up there, but I think then you try and go for your best bang for buck, as Nicholas said. You know, if you've only got 25 minutes but you need a lot of aerobic endurance, I think you need to find what's best for you. From my experience, what's worked best for me is a lot of interval-based, controlled intensity, interval-based stuff, so MAS. Probably the biggest one there.
How do you control it? Heart rate, speed?
Yeah, I think at semi-pro level, you're unlikely to have that heart rate opportunity. And again, a heart rate can be so fickle. If your athlete's tired or stressed or just had a coffee, it's very hard to control that time. I think, you know, if you've got a good test result or a nice reliable test that you managed to get done, so we use a yo-yo, and you can kind of convert from there and get a general idea type thing. And then at least, you know, if your test is good, you're controlling within a certain level type thing. And then you know roughly what intensity of MAS corresponds to what part of the energy system you're trying to look at. So I like to work that, you know, 100 to 120% quite frequently and quite early on, just to kind of say, all right, this is your lactic level. And this is, not lactic, that's probably a bad term for it. This is, you know, where you start to hurt a bit. And that covers your aerobic endurance, which you might need more of. In a team setting, and then you still get that higher level. Okay, you're learning to deal with a bit of heat in terms of how hard we're working, and you're trying to push that limit a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher. I've had pretty good success with that one so far, and of course you kind of dose your speed in as you need to. I like to keep majority initially anyway, depending on time limits, that MAS interval based stuff high amounts early, and then, you know, you gradually build more and more speed into it, you know, dosing that max speed a bit higher. And then you've got this nice balance of, it's probably, if you had to imagine a graph, it's probably, yeah, majorly at the start of the preseason, your interval-based stuff high early, a little bit of speed. And as you go through, that interval drops a bit, the speed gets a bit higher, and then your volume starts to lower a bit, you know, as you get to that season. But again, in semi-pro levels, it is tough. But I think Bob Aleo tweeted about it the other day, the intervals help everyone you know, stay competitive because you can expose your athletes to this kind of stimulus and get that DNA change, or, you know, to deal with that kind of lactic and get better at using that lactic acid as an energy source. I think a lot of the sports we play, team sports, are that interval-based sports. So I think that's if you stay mostly there, in terms of at least your cardiovascular type deal, I think you're probably going to be relatively okay in the semi-pro land.
Interesting. What sort of percentages are we talking when you say a certain percentage of MAS will relate to the aerobic system, is what I guess you were referring to before, and another percentage will relate to, say, anaerobic lactate, and then another percentage might relate to anaerobic alactate. What sort of percentages would you relate to those energy systems?
Yeah, 100%. I think you just got to go back to the definition of what aerobic, anaerobic, and, you know, your high-level sprint stuff is. I think, personally, if you're under 100, it will, by definition, if you tested well, that's, you know, you're not building up that much lactic acid. It's you're not building up that much, and you can kind of clear it away. So I like to use under 100 as a bit of a recovery effort if I'm looking to make a longer time interval. If I'm looking to work that lower end of the alactic side, I'm trying to look maybe 100, 110, because I find a lot of athletes, they can push themselves a bit there, but they can still get through if they have to get through 20 minutes of conditioning or 30 minutes and then have to do a skill session after. I think that's a big consideration as well. If you've got skills after that, you know, particularly if the coach is like, you want this skill level to be high, you've got it. You can't cook them too early. But if you're looking to really induce that heavy burn, you're probably looking in excess of 115 to a, you know, I like to work. I haven't gone much higher than 130%. That's probably more of a sprint with the girls that I've worked with so far with netball. That's what I've found. If you look 100 to 110 for that bit of the burn, if you're looking, of course, it depends on how long you go for as well and what kind of you design. But 110 plus 115, that's when you start to really get that higher level. Okay, this is really starting to hit now.
Mm-hmm. What would be the majority of your MAS work based? Where would it be? Where would it sit percentage-wise?
Probably 100 to 115%, I would think, depending on the time of the season. Right now, so we've just finished the regular season into finals now, most of it sat at about 100 to 110% of their most recent yo-yo. So about that 4 to 4.8 meters per second type deal at 100%. So, you know, probably 4.5 to 5.1 or so, depending on the girl. But again, of course, it depends on what you're working with. I know the goal shooters, they are almost always jumping. And that's more or less their movement. So they can handle a little bit of high intensity, but as soon as you go for too long, they're cactus. So again, you just got to be wary of what you're doing there as well. You know, then you go back to your skill demands and your sport demands. You probably don't want to push them too hard because that might put them in a bad spot where they can't perform. But again, they only move 800 meters in a game. So they may not need that much. Whereas if you've got a center, they might need that extra 115, 120%. So again, it's about knowing what you need to do if you can individualize. But majority, again, as Nicholas said, majority probably rules that argument there, yeah.
Interesting. Very, very good points. Very interesting too. Kurt, philosophy on energy system training?
I'm a little bit different to most in energy systems when I hear people talk about them. I do use MAS, but I use MAS for a prescription percentage only. I'm a big fan of speed is king. And what I mean by that is most of my endurance training, aerobic training, everything is still done at a high-ish intensity. So even with MAS, generally anything is done at 120% over, but I will keep the same exercise in, but change their actual intensity effort during different sections. And then I'll just build volume and speed work. So from the beginning, I'll use a pyramid type of periodization where I'll start easy in regards to their sprint work. So say if I'll just use an example where we're looking at 40-meter, 60-meter sprints, they're only going at about 80 to 90% on their first week, and they're building over the next 3 weeks to 100%, so they don't actually complete a maximal sprint until their third week in. So they can just build a little bit of technique, a little bit of speed, and we'll filter that in with MAS-based type prescription and repeat sprintability type work. So they'll always be running at a high-ish intensity at all times. And then you build that into volume. So once you're starting to work at your 100% speeds, you'll end up, or well, it won't ever be 100% speed when you're working volume, but you'll end up building these kind of efforts where they're at 95% or so, and they might be just doing 10 meter up and back shuttle and then rest for a short period of time, and they'll be doing that for about 4 minutes, and then we'll rest 2 minutes, repeat for 4 minutes, change the drill slightly, rest 2 minutes, repeat again. So they're doing small blocks, small rest, repeat, small blocks, small rest, repeat at very high intensities. And then we just taper a little bit in regards to if they're running at 100% versus 90 versus 80 and what they perceive. So it's a bit of a mix. And when I do MAS type drills, I'll mix intensities. So instead of saying 120%, I like to mix 120, 130s with then lactic type drills as well. So then they have to then repeat and back up with an MAS lactate in the same block of training, sorry, same block of exercise as well. So like an example would be if we're doing 120% effort, which would be roughly say 45 meters up and back, and then they'll rest 15 seconds, then we'll go straight out at 130% effort for 10 seconds, rest 10 seconds up, 130% effort back, rest 10 seconds, and then I'll complete a lactic drill within 30 seconds, give them a little bit of rest, and then repeat that drill continuously for 6 minutes, rest, and then repeat that again. So I like mixed intensities, but I'm a big fan of speed is king, and if they don't run at low intensities during their training, I find they tend to maintain these high intensities during their game as well.
Yes.
It's true. Long-winded explanation, but speed is king in my world.
Yeah, cool. No, it's look, it makes a lot of sense to me. I've seen both approaches work really well, like a long to short approach type thing, or just always just based on building volume with speed as well. And it's really interesting. I really think it's a horses for courses approach, and based on who you've got as well, and what type of athletes those athletes are. But what you're saying there sounds like it'll work for the majority of people that you're going to get through. Sam talked about using the yo-yo. How do we assess our energy systems? Is anybody doing like VO2 max tests and looking at your VT1, VT2, or is it yo-yo test? Is it field test? What are we doing in regards to assessing energy systems out there? And Nicola, please kick us off here.
Yeah, so the main tests that we did, depending on the sport, were either the yo-yo or the bronco, or the otherwise known as the 1.2 test. So our rugby-based sports use the bronco, and then the others use...
Can you explain the bronco? Yo-yo. Just for... I'm sure the yo-yo is pretty familiar, but explain the bronco for us, please.
It's a 20, 40, 60-meter shuttle run done 5 times in a row.
Yeah, cool. Continuous? Do you have any break in between those 20, 40, 60s?
Continuous the whole time. Great fun.
Yeah, cool. Go on, please. Go on. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh no, they're the main two tests that we used at Sydney Uni. We did our prescription off those, really.
Yeah, cool. So what would you do with your prescription? Like, would you take the final speed of the yo-yo, and then that would become your maximal aerobic speed, or what would you do in regards to that? And regarding the bronco test too, what would you do there to get your prescription?
Yeah, for the yo-yo, exactly like you said, get the top speed and get the MAS score from that. Unfortunately, with soccer, we would have been great to do the yo-yo more times to be able to use it throughout the season, but we didn't actually have the ability to do that, so we just were able to test it twice throughout. I think it was 46 weeks we did soccer on. And so from then on, basically how they did their MAS, if they were making their zones really, really easily and consistently, they got moved up. And yeah, the bronco was one that is commonly used in rugby. And yeah, you can get MAS from that as well. But yeah, I was no longer working in the men's rugby where it was used.
So what they would just take the total time for the Bronco and then divide that by how many meters the guys ran?
Yeah, and also just they used it a lot as a tracking of energy systems. So they in the men's rugby, they'd test the Bronco, I think it was every 4 to 6 weeks, and it would be part of their conditioning. So just continually tracking and seeing if how they're going from there and, yeah, monitoring off that.
Interesting. I'm sure you're going to be exposed to a whole heap of interesting energy system assessments and so on with rowing and your upcoming work.
Exciting.
Yeah, interested to touch base with you in the future about what you've been doing out there. Sam, mate, you talked about the yo-yo. Do you use anything else? Do you use anything with the high school kids rather than netball or something different?
Yeah, I think it comes to the sheer block of like how many kids you've got. I've used the 1.2 pretty extensively across our programs, that is, just because it's easy to run, it's easy for the kids to learn. And as well, with kids, particularly the younger ones, like the 13, 4 to 15-year-olds, anything could put them off and they could run really poorly. So with the could use yo-yo as well, but again, just having access to space, like we can get an oval pretty easily to run the yo-yo, but then to get a court at some point in time or the hall, we're pretty limited on that at ease. It can be tough. So, yeah, we run the 1.2. A couple of schools we play sport against actually have just bought a couple of VO2 max machines. So that'll be interesting to see how they use those for their sport programs as well. Because, again, you've got the cost of actually – you've got to have someone actually know how to run the test and then interpret the findings of the tests. But I find easy stuff like the 1.2 works pretty well. The beep test has got a – being a school, it's got a fair bit of node around the school. Maybe 10 years ago, there's a bit of data from that. But, again, since I've been there, the 1.2 has been kind of the king at the moment just because it's easy to run. And right now with the athletics program, we're kind of – basing a bit of our programming off that, how the kids have gone in a 1.2 compared to an 800 compared to a 1500, and just kind of seeing where that inflection point might be in terms of their times, where they might more preferred to that, you know, under the 2 lap race compared to the 3.5 lap race type, or 3 3/4 lap race type thing. So that's more or less what we do at Eddie's. And netball, we have to do it under Netball Australia. It's the preferred method, and it's kind of continued testing now. We use the yo-yo. But yeah, pretty simple from my point of view.
Yeah, right. And is that because there's obviously some different types of yo-yos too.
Yeah.
It's like an IR1, an IR2. What are you using there?
IR1. IR1 is that's been the standard for a while. I think it was flirted with for a while, the IR2, but I think particularly given the breadth of play you get across netball, you get your whippets in the centres and the wing attack and wing defence, but then often, well, not so much anymore, but your goal shooters tend to be, you know, there's some data suggesting they move 800 meters to a K in a game. So the 1.2 is already over what they actually move in a game. And most of that movement's a couple of steps each way. So again, not super specific to what we actually do. But again, just the general is the easiest, I think, it was the way it was taken with netball.
Yeah, wow. Wow. Interesting. Kurt, how are you assessing your energy systems?
I use so many different things for different sports. So I have the luxury of, at times I've used VO2 max for triathletes before, both treadmill and bike. With rugby league, I'll generally just do a straight 5 minute test, rather than the short shuttles like the Bronco. I'll just do it over 100 meters, 5 minutes max, max distance. I use 30-15 IFT with hockey. I know hockey usually uses yo-yo, but I really like the 30-15 IFT. With boxers, I'll use the same thing that I do for rugby, just because I find it's nice and short and they can keep a high intensity. And so then we work off that a lot. With tennis, I do something similar, but we just do the continuous shuttles again. Just for a block of time, 5 minutes again. So I find anything between 3 and 7 minutes seems to work really effectively. Anything longer than that, I find it just too slow for 100%. And if you're working with such a big mix of individuals, then I guess having worked with rugby league a lot, you'll have a team where you've got 130 kilogram boys with 70 kilogram boys, and so you've got to have a test that suits everyone too. So I worked with quite a few different tests, and I mix it up a little bit here and there depending on the sport, obviously, but I do like my 5-minute block test to get an MES score out of it.
Mm-hmm. And so the rugby guys might be running like a 100-meter shuttle for 5 minutes continuously. What would the tennis guys be doing? Would they just be doing something on the court?
We use a length of court, so we take the net away. And, yeah, we use net of, length of the court.
Yeah, cool. Cool. And then what you do, you get the total distance that they go on those 5 minutes, divide that by 300 seconds because that's 5 minutes, right? And then that gives you your MAS score.
Exactly right.
Yeah, cool. Cool. That's good. Really nice, easy to apply, practical things. What did you do with the triathletes that did the VO2 max test? How did you take those results and then apply them?
So I look at the max speed they get on the VO2, and so any of their actual high-intensity efforts must remain above that time. But it's really good testing them both on the bike and treadmill, so you can actually give them the intensity at which they hit their VT2. I don't use VT1 too much in regards to their prescription, unless it's you're going on a long, slow run, long, slow ride, then you're below this intensity at all times. But otherwise, if they feel they're creeping up towards their VT2, they need to back it off a little bit, because triathletes love to think that they think, oh, yeah, I can go on my run for 4-minute Ks, but they have to actually taper it back to the 5-minute Ks. They've got to really learn to keep that technique under a slow pace for their long work, and otherwise they're working at too high intensities if they're doing some long work, and then they just burn out too quickly. So, I do like to use VT2 and your max speed at VO2 max to prescribe.
Yeah, cool. Because it's quite interesting, the whole polarization of training and endurance sports, where they kind of get you out of that middle zone of intensity, and you might want to be working more the real high intensity and then more the low intensity stuff, but none of that moderate intensity. And from what I got from you there is you're kind of speaking that language in terms of we want to be working at VT2 and above, maybe, and VT1 and below most of the time.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm a big fan of polarized training with endurance sports.
How would you do that for somebody who's looking after a triathlete, I should say, or an endurance sport athlete, if they didn't have access to a VO2 or gas analysis, a metabolic cart to test the VO2 max?
I've got a few tests that I've used in the past. So I'll do a 3K time trial for one. So I'll get the average speed over that. For the bike, I'll use it's been a while since I've done this one. I actually use a 14-minute test and get the max speed from that. So it ends up being similar to NMAS, and everything above that they have to work above for an axis of VT2. It's not exactly too precise with that, and but you get a must work over this percentage and must work under this percentage type efforts from those two tests. So a 3K time trial in running and a 14-minute time trial for cycling.
Awesome. Next question is, what are we going to be implementing in our practice? What are we excited about learning around energy systems in the next 12 months? And we'll start with you again, please, Nicola.
Yes. So just seeing off water, how much energy system work we actually do. I know from previously they do a circuit day quite often, and being able to utilize that while getting some strength gains and also some energy system development will be super interesting with the rowers.
Yeah, cool. So what are these circuits like? Muscular endurance circuits? Are they doing like body weight exercises, or is it say like on the bike and then on a Vertimax or on the rower, like Dryland Erg? What are they doing there in the circuits?
Yeah, so a lot of the time it's strength endurance based, so some weighted and body weight work. The physiologist and the coaches generally prescribe the erg work and the bike work, in my understanding of the environment so far. So not as much as, yeah, if you're working with a team sport doing the energy system development work.
Cool. Yeah, super interesting. I'm sure you're going to learn a lot there. Sam, what about yourself? Anything you want to be learning about energy systems and then applying?
Yeah, so I think the one of the big ones for me in netball is we're seeing now with the more sports science getting into it, we've been pretty fortunate to use some GPS units with the girls this year in that semi-pro level and just kind of understanding, you know, how the contact fits into netball. Of course, it's semi-contact, and I think from what we've seen in the super netball, it's getting more and more physical, and I think that's working down. And I have noticed just anecdotally that the games that we play that are highly like a lot of contact, the girls are way more tied after, and the RPE scores are higher. So kind of going, all right, let's look at this GPS data and see, you know, what are our collisions like, our accelerometer load and things like that, and your player load, and say, well, how can we get that into conditioning without hurting them, but, you know, preparing them to be able to deal with that in a game. I think trying to learn how that might fit in, and where could be the way it goes, and just to how much is to, are we going to take away from training here? Is this maybe a skill drill? Is this more a conditioning drill? Is it a bit of a bounce drill where you go between both? That's where I really want to have a look at this year and just kind of see if we can get some data about that and say, oh, let's get a bit smarter about how we do this rather than just running into a footy pad, collecting the girl on the way through, maybe sitting her on the ground and then getting up and running again. We can do a bit better than that, I think.
Interesting. Kurt?
I'm actually going to look to experiment with integrating strength and energy systems development. I know it seems a little bit, counterintuitive when you start to look at a bit of research, but actually integrating going from strength to conditioning back to conditioning type sessions, and seeing what kind of impact that has with rugby league specifically. So that's kind of what I'm interested in trialing out or experimenting with. I've done, like I said, a few different types of programs and energy systems development across multiple sports. So I'm just trying to experiment with something when a sport such as rugby league does use high contact, high force, and then conditioning aspects too. So just kind of tamper and experiment with that a little bit because of the reduced time that I actually have with them.
Sure. What do you think you'll be doing? Like, how do you think you'll be setting those things up?
The fortunate thing is we've got a few barbells, so I'll be setting up a few basic strength exercises, so a little strength circuit, and then head straight out into the field because it's right next to where we actually have the gym. About another 5-10 minute block there, head straight back to strength, and then do another block there, and then head straight onto the field again. I guess before you start the strength work, though, you'd do a bit of a warm up, a bit of speed work first, and then kind of lead the session from there on in.
Yeah, cool. I'll tell you what, because this is for everybody listening as well, but definitely along this line of integrating sort of strength with energy system workers, if you're going to the conference, make sure you check out Carmen Bott's lecture, and she does some wonderful work with wrestlers in and around that specific topic. So definitely a person to check out if for your interest, Kurt.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. I think we just recently followed each other on Instagram or Twitter, so just getting into some of that stuff.
There you go. Already BFFs. I love it.
So that's a wrap. Before I go, I've got to mention the ACA conference. There's going to be some great presenters there, including these roundtable speakers you're listening to right now. I've just listened to. It's on the Gold Coast, no better part of Australia, 8th to 10th of November. There's a research stream. There's a tactical stream. So if you're an S&C coach, sports scientist, studio, physiotherapist, PE teacher, personal trainer, you name it, you want to be there. It's going to be a great time. You're going to learn heaps. Also want to mention Val Performance again. Great support of the ACA in this podcast. They'll be at the ACA conference again. So please go up to them. Say you appreciate us looking after this podcast. It means a lot to us. We're getting some good information. And look, if you're interested in their products, make sure you check out valperformance.com. Can't recommend them highly enough. So we've got to go. We'll have more from this roundtable next episode. We're going to talk prehab, rehab. Just like this one, it'll be well worth your time. So until you hear from me next, I'm Joseph Coyne. This is the ASCA Podcast.